Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God again. And we're going to be talking about apostasy and red heifers and confusion. And maybe we might even get into talking about trolls and sociopaths. But a lot of different topics have been coming up this week on the network and off the network and in the living network. And these are all different things. The network is a network of email groups all across the country, around the world, that you can join. We call it the Living Network. You can find it at thelivingnetwork.org or preparingyou.com or at hisholychurch.org. And you can join and you can meet people through emails on a local group. That's just email groups. The actual Living Network is when you actually begin to create living connections. You know, not just Facebook connections, but actual people that you meet, people you talk to, people you may work with, people you interact with, the people that you accomplish something with. That's the Living Network. And of course, the reason we're doing that is because in the days of Abraham, he created a network so that when five armies were invading and taking city-state after city-state, Abraham and his network put an end to it in one night because he had a network, a living network of people. And somehow or other, he connected those network of people so that when he went to save his nephew, Lot, other people joined with him in such numbers that they put an end to the tyrants who were marching into their country and into their community overnight. He had some sort of ability and power to do this that operated through this network of people that he had already created. He referred to setting up altars in these different places that he went, in these different valleys. He would set up altars. And somehow or other, these altars created this human network so that he and his, you know, few hundred armed men who goes to face this huge army that was taking whole city-states one after another, Sodom and Gomorrah and others, when he went to confront that army, he had enough people in his network that they were able to defeat, and enough of a certain kind of people in his network to go and efficiently defeat that army overnight. Now that's the story, but the details of the network seem to be lost in a haze, as if we were looking through a smoky glass with a dim light. And people draw pictures and they make Hollywood movies and Renaissance paintings of these events. And then you think, oh, that's the way it was. But that really isn't the way it was. That's the way somebody thinks it was. Now, when you really start thinking, how were these people so closely bound together? They didn't even have telephones. They didn't have internet. They didn't have Facebook. But somehow or other, they were bound together so closely that when Abraham's nephew needed saving, Abraham and hundreds of people came with sharp things and stopped that army in its track. Amazing. What was the bonding agent of such a network of people? Well, it was those altars. Those altars that he was building. So somehow or other, piling up stones out on the desert, slaughtering sheep and setting them up on top of those stones and setting them on fire so that they burn up, bound all these people together so that they would risk their lives in a battle with other men with really sharp things to save a guy who had gone off to live in the cities instead of sticking by his uncle? What the heck is going on? What was really happening? Come on now. You don't really think piling up stones and slitting the throat of a sheep and setting it up on that stones and setting it on fire was binding all these people together so that they would risk their life and limb, leave their homes, and go attack an efficient army just because they all burn sheep together? There must be more to it than that, don't you think? Something more than just burning up sheep. Have you ever done that? Have you ever, you know, piled up stones and put a bunch of wood up there and set a sheep, dead sheep, up on top of there and set it on fire? I did. I didn't kill the sheep. It was already dead. But I did it as a demonstration to show you what happens. There's laws of physics that take place. We were trying to film in front of this fire while it was going so I could explain to you what was really being told to you in this allegorical text, where the metaphors were and where the actual facts were. And I kept turning around and ducking because there was explosions going on behind me. There was no sweet savor coming up from that fire. I can guarantee you that. It stunk. It stunk horribly. It's burning wool. Wool doesn't burn well. Gases, excrement exploding out of the sheep. Nothing pretty about it at all. God wouldn't be pleased with it at all. But that's what was taking place. But somehow or other, you think that this is what piling up those stones and sacrifices was all about. And when I tell people, no, it wasn't about piling up rocks and killing sheep and setting them on fire. And I show them in the language the meaning of the words, what kidneys means when it, other than the kidneys. Because the same word for kidney is the same word for control, the reins of control. It's even translated reins 18 times. Reins are what you hold when you want to control, you know, a horse, a donkey, or whatever. When you want the control of something, you grab the reins, and the reins were given to the Levites. They would have you believe that the Levites were eating kidney and kidney fat every day, because that was their portion. I can guarantee you the Levites would be quitting the job pretty quick if all they had every day to eat was kidney and kidney fat. That's not what they're talking about. When you find out that when they talk about the rump and the sacrifice, that the same words they're using in reference to that is the words for a gift of God, the same word as Elijah's name. Then you say, well, wait a minute, what are they really talking about? When they talk about your liver, what you do with the liver in the sacrifice. And it's the same word for honor. Same exact word. Liver, honor, same thing. Leaves a lot of room for misconception. Because this sacrifice was actually a social welfare system for a community that was out there in the wilderness that had no walls around it to bind the people in. No central treasury where they had to put all their money so that they would only have, like, issued currency by the state in order to buy things with. That's what they did in Egypt. All the gold was held by the government. except, you know, jewelers could have a little bit of gold for making jewelry and stuff like that. But the people, when they wanted to buy something, they used little clay scarabs and pieces of rice paper. Not rice paper. They used kind of a paper out of making it out of the reeds and stuff. But most of it, because that's pretty flimsy stuff, most of it was made out of clay. And they would bake it with cymbals, and they would use it to exchange for money. And that's how they operated, because it had no, the clay, little clay scarabs that they used had no real value, but they were what was issued as money. They also used grain as money, because grain was, you know, it was a storable commodity. And that kept the people bound in Egypt, because if you wanted to leave Egypt, those scarabs weren't of any value anywhere else but in Egypt. Kept the people subject, because the government had control over the use of the scarabs and the value of the scarabs, etc., etc. And they tried to set this up with the golden calf in the camp when Moses wasn't there, and the people were afraid that everybody would start to scatter. They created this central golden calf, which was like a central bank, and then they were going to issue something, because Aaron knew the arts of the temple, and the temple in Egypt were banks. They were treasuries. See, if you don't know, if you don't put this in the context of how societies work, how societies bind themselves together, you won't understand what they're really talking about, because they don't go into all that detail in the text. And where they do go into the detail, people turn it into piles of stones and burning sheep. And when I explained to him that a council of men, the same word for a council of men is a gathering of stones, same word in the Hebrew. Then the altars, being a gathering of stones, is a gathering of men, living altars. And when you turn over your sheep or your sacrifice to them, the reins of control of those sacrifices to them, they can use them for the purposes of the altars. And that purpose was a social welfare system. And people gathered around the altars and they sacrificed to the altars because that was their social welfare system. If they fell and hurt themselves or broke their legs or broke their backs, they didn't just starve on the trail. There was a social welfare system, a religious social welfare system, because religion has had two definitions over the centuries, over the millenniums. If you go back in history and read the ancient documents, you will eventually figure out, even if you just go back and read the dictionaries 100 years ago and the dictionaries today, you know, like Bouvier's. When Bouvier's was written, Bouvier's Law Dictionary was written and is the foundational law dictionary for the Constitution of the United States, which mentions religion. At the time that that was written, the definition of religion was how you performed your duty to God and your fellow man. That was the primary definition of the word religion to early Americans, which is why the early church in America was referred to as embryonic republics. But then they shifted in America, they've shifted the meaning of religion, the word religion, over to the other alternate definition, which you see from time to time in the 13th century, we see it going on, and we see it in different cultures all the time, shifting back and forth between these two definitions. The other definition is religion is what you think about God. Now, the first definition meets the character of Christ. The second definition is full of vanity. What you think about God saves you. That's what people are telling you. If you believe these doctrines that we have written out by our own hands, then and only then are you saved. You don't have to do anything. You just have to think a thought. And that's your religion, because religion is what you think about God. And that's the change. They changed the definition of religion to what you think about God instead of what you do for God and your fellow man in the fulfillment of your duty that is a divine duty that is placed on you from the beginning to love your neighbor. We don't have to do that, you see, in the second religious definition. In the second religious definition, you just have to think a thought and tell everybody that you really, really, really believe it. And then you're saved. You've saved yourself with your thought. That's powerful. It's a lie. You can't save yourself with a thought. But people think you can. And they look for preachers who will tell them that. Keep tickling their ears. Oh, you're saved because you think a thought. You believe an idea that I wrote down. So you're saved. It's insane. It's crazy. But that's the way people are thinking now. And that is one of the key elements of the strong delusion that has brought the whole world back into the bondage of Egypt. And what you should really be doing is building the altars of Abraham and the altars of Moses and the altars of Jesus Christ. Made out of living stone. Looking out amongst yourselves and finding men you trust. And putting them over this business of what they call in the New Testament the daily ministration. The social welfare system. The religious social welfare system of Christ. Which is what the church is supposed to be doing. It's not supposed to be tickling your ears. It's supposed to be smacking you upside the head with truth so that you repent and turn around and start living as if you actually loved your neighbor as yourself. An amazing concept. You know, most of these guys think, oh yeah, I love my neighbor as I sit here in my pew and listen to the music. No. You have to build altars of stone. Living stone. Find men of service, not men seeking power or control or an easy way out of working, but men who actually apply themselves to work and get her done. And you sacrifice to them. See, when I explain to people, and this all started again, and we return to it on a regular basis, but I recently had a Facebook conversation with somebody. Barry Dobson's Facebook, I think, was the Facebook. And there was somebody on it, Michael something or other. And Barry had posted something about a red heifer that had been found in America. There's some people trying to breed perfect red heifers because there's a reference one place in the Bible to the red heifer, the sacrifice of the red heifer. And so supposedly when they start the sacrifice again, they can build the temple again out of stone. They don't realize that the physical stone temple that was built back in the days of Solomon was actually an abomination. Because they write in, you know, there's one place in the Bible where they talk about building the temple again after they came back from a captivity, and they talk about the old men weeping. And I heard a preacher saying that they were weeping for joy. And I thought, like, well, that's not what it sounds like it says to me. And my daughter happened to be there, too, and she kind of looked up and thought, like, that's not what it sounds like it says to her either. And of course, later on, we found out that neither one of us thought that that's what it was saying. We were reading it right there, but that's the way he was interpreting it. Everybody went along with him because he was a good ear tickler. Well, he wasn't real good at it, but he's doing something else now. I think he's managing a restaurant. but you know, because he got into trouble time and time again, but He was trying to be a good ear-tickling preacher. But the old men wept because they knew that the design of the original temple that God intended us to build was not made out of dead stone, but living stone. The stones that you gathered with living men. The church is not a building. It's something you build, but it's something alive. It's something you build out of men and women who love their neighbor as themselves and love God with their whole heart and soul and come in the character of God. I say character instead of name because if I say name, you think it means that you have to be saying Yeshua or something. That's not coming in the name of somebody. Coming in the name of somebody is coming according to his character. Because in those days, they used to name people according to their character, just like Indians, you know. And I've gone through this before. Indians that have names like Stinking Writing Blanket. And when you translate it, it sounds like it's a terrible name. That's actually a good name. It means he's a really good writer. But the metaphors and allegories of their language and their thinking create a name like Stinking Riding Blanket for somebody who's a very good rider of horses, a great horseman. All the Indians, when they hear that, they know what it meant. And that's why they named him, because that's the kind of guy he is. He's a horseman. Or the Indian named Stabs in the back. There was really an Indian named Stabs in the back. But that was a good name. That wasn't a bad name. Now we hear it. We think it's a bad name. We don't understand the metaphor and the allegory of their language. You know, when they talk about their religion and you read ancient scripts like the Arthavedas and some of the ones that talk about storks and monkeys and all that. Now people turn them into, you know, monkey gods and all this stuff. But what they're really talking about is characteristics of people. The ibis has a certain characteristic that they were aware of. And they use that as a symbol in a story to talk about those characteristics that are often found in men. Monkeys have another characteristic. We use the same kind of thing, you know, when we talk about the kids stop monkeying around and get the job done. What's monkeying around? It's fiddling around, not doing the job. And we understand that metaphor because we use it. But when they say, this is Chief Stabs in the back, you think, well, he's a traitor. No, it means he is so stealthy in war that he can sneak up on a bad guy. He can sneak up on a bad guy and stab him in the back before he even knows he's there. He's a very good stalker. That's a good thing. You know, in time of war, I guess it's a good thing. But anyway, so we're going to get more into these metaphors and find out what that red heifer is really all about when we return to Keys of the Kingdom after a brief break.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, God bless America, and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me. And many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to be in the world but not of it, and what it means perhaps for the first time to truly love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. The kingdom of God is at hand. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
If we want our God-given unalienable rights back, we must stop exercising dominion over our neighbors. Start keeping the commandments. Do not covet. Do not steal. Which includes the legalized covetousness and plunder that is mandatory in all man-made governments. Start by coming together in free will assemblies of individuals and families that are seeking to return to God's kingdom government. Families and individuals start by seeking, striving, and working to be the departments of health, education, welfare, economy, defense, agriculture, energy, and justice for other families in the free assembly, but also for other families of families near and far. The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom. So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. Yeah, well, we were talking about the red heifer, the sacrifice of the red heifer. And it was kind of an interesting sacrifice. Supposedly they got a red heifer, and this is what they were looking for here in America, is because people are trying to breed the perfect red heifer with not one single white hair on it anywhere. Problem is that almost, you know, anytime a hair follicle dies, it's going to turn white. You know, or it doesn't have to even completely die, but just have, you know, a little bruise or shock or anything to it, and it can turn white. It loses its pigment. And this happens naturally all the time in any animal whatsoever. So it's not a matter of, you know, it may come in red, but then it may turn white. And of course, they had this red heifer. And then there's some, a bunch of, you know, pharisaical guys going over the red heifer looking for a single white hair. And I think, you know, after he's gone through about 5,000 hairs, you know, and all of a sudden he comes to a white one, he might just look both ways and grab that white one and just jerk it out and throw it away. Because he doesn't want to have to start counting all over again with a new heifer. But anyway, this is what they're looking for, is to get the perfect red heifer with not one single hair that's out of place or another color. The perfect red heifer, then we can start the sacrifice of the red heifer and build the temple of dead stone and pretend to love God and come in his ways. And I throw in the word like pretend because that's what they're doing. They're pretending to love God by doing all this. And they just love to create these kind of mindless, senseless rituals and get everybody all worked up and do these things and say, oh, now God will be pleased because we're going to set this red heifer on fire and then we will gather up his ashes and we will mix them with water and we will sprinkle them on the people and their sins will be forgiven and on and on and on and on and on. And that's not what the Bible's talking about. That's not what it's talking about at all. You got the allegory. I mean, it's like the old Indian stories where, you know, like, you know, they have, I can't remember the Indian name right offhand, but, you know, they had their Indian goddess and man and woman. And, you know, I mean, they have one story where the man and woman were all one creature and they had four legs and four arms, and they rolled around, and they never got tired. This is their story. But then they got arrogant and vain and thought they didn't have to listen to God anymore. And so God split them in two. And then now man had two legs and two arms, and woman had two legs and two arms, and they were no more the same. They were at enmity with each other. And they would get tired, and they would not be contending with God so much. And life got harder. Well, you know, it's kind of a goofy story, yeah. But, you know, it's a story that the Indians used to tell, in one tribe anyway, about the creation of man and why he is. But if you actually look at the allegory and the metaphor, is, you know, isn't that what they talk about with Adam and Eve? You know, that they're walking with God. They're these perfect creatures. And then because they got vain and decided to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and decide for themselves what was good and evil and not listen to the tree of life, which was God walking with them, the Holy Spirit of God walking with them, then they become at enmity with each other. And the woman has to serve the husband, and she longs for a real husband, and the husband, it becomes a tyrant over the woman, and doesn't know how to be a real man. And it's the same story, it's just different allegories, different metaphors. It takes us back to our, everybody is eating of the tree of knowledge every day. I mean, the guys who perpetrate this false religion of think a thought and be saved, they want you to eat of the tree of knowledge about their doctrines, their private interpretations of the Holy Scriptures. And if you believe their private interpretations, then they will tell you that you're saved, and they will give you hugs on the Sabbath and Sunday and say, oh, it's great to all be saved together in our little church. Good thing we come in the name of Yahweh or Jehovah, and we'll all be Jehovah Witnesses or whatever religion you want to create. But all those religions are based on the idea that religion is what you think about God. Believe my, love me, love my doctrine. We used to have a thing here, you know, everybody who came out here at one time, my brothers and brother-in-law and stuff like that, and we all kind of lived out here in the desert, and we're trying different things and eventually formed a partnership, and now they've all left. They've all gone back to the city, but my life is actually, it's always been on the same course, all it looks like it went this way and that way. But the reality is when we all came, different ones of us raised goats. You know, the poor man's dairy cow. And then somebody would go out of the goat business and somebody else would buy his goats and he would raise goats. And then all of a sudden, your goats that used to be his goats were bad goats because they made noise and they ate flowers or you know, whatever. They got into haystacks. And so there was we had this kind of phrase, love me, love my goats. You know, you have to forgive. You have to forgive me of owning what used to be your goats who are now causing problems for you. So, and this is what they do with their doctrines. You know, love my doctrine, then that means you love me. If you don't like my doctrines, then you must not love me. So they have this idea, love me, love my doctrines. The only problem is their doctrines are usually a bunch of goats. They're not the sheep of Christ. They're made up. You know, they get very smart guys who can run rings around people with all the knowledge in their head, which of course their head is the tree of knowledge. And they say, oh, he's really smart. I should believe his doctrines, what he teaches. And this is what happened. And somebody had mentioned the red heifer, and I had made some sort of comment on that. And evidently there were some other people that have been reading our material and looking at these things anew, and they realized too that the red heifer was actually symbolic of foreign aid. That's what the red heifer was all about. The sacrifice of the red heifer is about aid outside the camp. Anybody who understood that the sacrifices was the social welfare system inside the camp, and when you gave up your sheep, when you even the killing of a dove, it doesn't have anything to do with killing a poor little bird. You're supposed to kill a dove for recompense of sin, okay? But the same exact word for dove is the word for a piece of your estate. But as soon as I explain all this, they say, so you're telling me there was no sacrifice in the Old Testament? No, I didn't say that. I said they weren't piling up stones and setting sheep on top and setting them on fire. Didn't say anything about not being a sacrifice. Pay attention. I said the stones were living stones. When they gave their sheep or their basket of oil or their grain or whatever it was that they produced, that they had to give, they gave it to real living men. And it was burnt up to them. And then they used those funds in the form of sheep, grain, what have you, to take care of the needy of society, to help them out. And they knew who to help out based on a moral code, which we see in the Ten Commandments. If this guy is whoring around, or this gal is whoring around, she doesn't get no social welfare, because you bring that knowledge to the living stones and they stone her. They don't hit her with rocks. They just don't give her any social welfare. She's out of the social welfare system. That's why you have stoning within the walls. You know, that stoning has to do with shunning. You still let them be a part of your community, but they are shunned. Their welfare check doesn't come that month because they're whoring around. That's what they're telling you. But you take everything so literally, and it is literal. But it's literal within the allegory, within the metaphors of the language. When I come in and tell the kids to stop monkeying around, I literally mean stop monkeying around. Now, if you're gonna draw a picture, you know, and I could just see some kids doing this, monkeying around, and he's gonna think about a bunch of monkeys, a barrel of monkeys. And you have to wait till that passes, and then you make sure he really does get busy. Because that's his imagination. But the red heifer was outside the camp. It was a sacrifice outside the camp that had to be burned up completely, given out completely. What are the ashes? That's what comes back to you. The community that received that gift, which is now ashes to you, comes back to you mixed with water. What is water? Water is something that flows. Once you understand the Hebrew language, everywhere you see the letter M, Mem, is in reference to something that flows. And this is what Moses had trouble with, is that sacrifices weren't flowing. People weren't sharing. Same problem Jesus had. Everybody was hungry. There wasn't enough food, supposedly. And he says, so what does Jesus do? He takes the bread that was given to him to eat, because he hadn't eaten. He'd been talking all day. And he broke it and he gave it away. It shamed the people. He broke it and gave it away. And this is what Moses was trying to do, is get the people to learn to give. He was only supposed to speak to them about this giving, this flow of love. You see, you don't really love your neighbor when you sit in your pew and never give anything to the welfare of your neighbor. You only give stuff so that, you know, you put in a big stained glass window or a sound system in your church, you know, or cushion seats, or, you know, build a bigger dead building. But you're not taking care of the social welfare, the daily ministration we see in Acts 6. You're not doing that with your contributions. If anybody needs any real help, you know, want that regular check coming in, they got to go to the government that exercises authority one over the other. And they got to be like them. They got to sign up for their welfare, their Corbin, their sacrifice. From men who exercise authority, who use that oaken staff every day. But they can call themselves Christians because they think a thought. They believe in Jesus. They believe that he's the Son of God. The devil believes he's the Son of God. He's just not going to do what Jesus wants him to do. That's just like most Christians. They all say they believe Jesus is the Son of God, but they don't want to do what he said. Because he said, don't be like those governments that exercise authority to provide the benefits of society. That's what he says, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. He says that. Of course, he also says it when he says, love thy neighbor as thyself, which is what Moses said. But you somehow or other think it's love to send somebody to your neighbor's house to force them to give up money so that you can have free education. You think that's love. I think that's coveting your neighbor's goods. I think that will make you merchandise. I think it has made you merchandise. And so now you've got Common Core and you're saying, we want Common Core out of our schools. And it's not your schools. The schools belong to the benefactors who exercise authority. And you have to pay into them. And your schools are based on socialism. And socialism is a covetous system. And you're a sinner. But that's good news for you. Because now you can repent. And take your kids out of school and start homeschooling them. And you may have some trouble doing that. So I advise you to form congregations of record, congregations of testimony. gather with other people who want to do the same thing and help them as if they were yourselves. And they help you as if you were themselves. And now you're coming together in the name of Christ. Because that's what Christ came to do, is to help you see the truth. That to live and to build living altars of stone and sacrifice means you have to show up when an invading army takes your neighbor's nephew. Or whatever. I was referring to Abraham there, giving you kind of an allegory. And using the metaphors. So that when you yell uncle, somebody actually shows up. And that's what's going to happen, is absolute disaster is coming to the land. I don't care if you live in Australia or wherever, it's coming to all these lands, because it's coming to the whole world. You're going to call it the wrath of God, and it's just what you deserve. And some of you are going to cry uncle. But I don't know if anybody like Abraham is going to show up for you. Because I don't know if you've repented. You're going to cry out, but the Bible tells us in several places that when you cry out, God's not going to hear you. He's actually going to say, get away from me, you workers of iniquity. Because you haven't been actively loving your neighbor as yourself. You've been actively loving yourself. You see, what Abraham was doing, what Moses was doing, what John the Baptist was doing, what Jesus Christ was doing, was creating a living network of people who actually cared about their neighbor as much as themselves. They actually gathered together to help one another. They gathered together for what they could give rather than what they could receive, because they knew it was better to give than to receive. They knew it was better to come to serve than to be served. Now, if you had a network like that of several million people, you would be ready to leave Egypt. But you don't have that yet. So don't even think about leaving Egypt. Think about getting a little bit more of Egypt out of you. Now, if you want to leave Egypt now, actually you can't leave Egypt, but if you want to step out of the jurisdiction of Egypt, you have to step into the jurisdiction of God. You have to belong to God. That's what the Levites did when they stepped out of the walled-in camp of the golden calf. That's what the ministers, like Peter and the apostles and the 120 in the upper room did. They stepped out. They gave up everything they own. And they belonged to God. And they spoke to the people and said, look out amongst yourselves and find men you trust, and we will appoint them over this business. We have the power to appoint them over this business, because Jesus has appointed unto us a kingdom that he took away from those who were not bearing fruit. And all you guys who think that religion is what you think about God are not bearing fruit. Religion is what you do to fulfill your duty to God and your fellow man. Once you've accepted that, now you can find out what the government of God really looks like. Because I found it interesting the other day, religion is mentioned 5 times in the Bible. And the word government appears 5 times in the Bible. It actually appears a lot of times, but they only translated government 5 times. You know, like how many times do you find the word faith in the Old Testament? So they never mentioned faith in the Old Testament? Or is there another name for that word, that idea, that concept? You know, modern religion is an absolute travesty. Modern Christians are in absolute apostasy. There's some decent ones out there, but they're still in apostasy. They've followed the path of their heart, and they do good things. And some of them are really nice people. Some of them made lots of sacrifices for others and are not far from the kingdom. They've walked right up to the door. But they have to accept a little bit more of his truth to enter in. Now, some people think it's entering in to escape the system. No, it's not. It's just jumping out of the boat. But it's not going to keep you afloat. You need real faith to become a doer of the word. And we're going to do a series of shows on sloth. Because sloth is mentioned all kinds of times in the Bible. Being a sluggard or slothful. That's mentioned a lot. Because there's a lot of sluggards out there. You can call them trolls or sociopaths or a lot of things. But they're slothful. And one of the things I started mentioning in one of the previous programs, that one of the things in my study of heaven, when I was writing Heaven versus Heaven in the book Covenants of the Gods, which you can get free online, I realized that heaven's a busy place. It's like a beehive of busyness. I mean, you know, the ladder, Jacob's ladder. Yeah, angels going up and down and doing this and that and back and forth between this dimension and that dimension. We call heaven and we call here. Busy, busy, busy. Because they are diligent. They strive. And I won't get into all that. I was going to show you lots of different words. You know, be a watchman. You know, the Greek word watchman. It's the same as the word Gregory. That's where Gregory comes from. It means watchman. But a watchman isn't just a looker. That word that they translate into watchman, it means to be active. And those who know me know I'm active. I'm busy, busy, busy. I should read you a letter of somebody who wrote me, wanted off one of the groups. Came with another guy who admitted openly that he lied to get on the groups. He lied when he volunteered. He didn't intend to volunteer. He just said he volunteered because he wanted our secret knowledge. He found out that about 90% of what we do never appears on the internet network groups. You never even hear about it. Somebody who came about 13 years ago and joined one of the email groups, he just announced, I don't know if he's listening, but I have a letter here that I was going to send off, but again, I was sliding into first to do this show. But in it, he says he joined HHC 13 years ago. No, he didn't. He didn't join HHC, His Holy Church. He didn't join His Holy Church 13 years ago. He didn't join it last year. He didn't join it this year. He joined an email group that's not a part of the Living Network. He's standing in the gate. He knocked at the door. We haven't opened the door to him yet. He's not in His Holy Church. The whole email network, what do you think? We're going to put everything out there on an email on the internet? It doesn't work that way. That would be bad. It would be exposing everybody to every sociopath and troll that could come along. No, the Living Network is where you find out about what we're doing, and that means you have to become a doer too. But we'll talk more about being a doer and what you can be doing when we come back to Keys to the Kingdom. We'll talk a little bit about the Burning Bush Festival as well. We'll be back next time. Till then, peace on your house and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.